Welcome to The Bookshelf. I'm Chris Massini, literary producer for Spokane Public Radio. This is the first of four special episodes looking back on Spokane-based poet Todd Marshall's two-year term as Poet Laureate of the State of Washington. Todd is an award-winning poet and professor at Gonzaga University here in Spokane. He is the fourth Poet Laureate of our state and the first from Eastern Washington, though during his two-year term, he brought his enthusiasm for poetry and the arts to every corner of the state. Since the start of his term in February of 2016, he has driven his trusty Subaru more than 41,000 miles, nearly twice the circumference of the earth, visiting small towns, large cities, elementary schools, libraries, and civic events. In each of these four episodes, we'll hear Todd Marshall's reflections on his experience as Poet Laureate, as well as the voices of a few people who worked and interacted with him during his term. Let's jump in now to my conversation with Todd and his explanation of what he sees as the role of a state poet laureate. Now that we're at the end of your term as poet laureate, can you give us a little bit of background of what is the poet laureate? What does that mean?
Yeah. So the preface that I shared at every event I offered throughout the state goes something like this. My name is Todd Marshall, and from 2016 to 2018, I'm serving as the Washington State Poet Laureate. The Poet Laureate position is sponsored by Arts Washington and Humanities Washington, and it exists to increase awareness and appreciation of poetry throughout the state. Now, that phrase at the end, to increase awareness and appreciation of poetry throughout the state, is a pretty ambiguous one. So as part of my service, as part of my appointment, I proposed some things that I would do as Poet Laureate. The first and probably most visible one was the collection of poems that became the collection Washington 129. I put out a call for submissions. I received 2,400 poems. 129 of them were gathered into a book that was published in April of 2017. There are also four chapbooks that I just finished producing with the help of Gonzaga students that are also going to be shared with people in Washington. So that was a really concrete and obvious way that I could pursue the goal of increasing awareness and appreciation of poetry throughout the state. The second way that I pursued it was an outreach. That outreach took on varied forms. I spoke about poetry to kindergarten classes. I spoke about poetry at retirement homes. I visited university grad students. I went to libraries and coffee shops and bars and art galleries and did quite a range of different events. At some of the events, I would share poems by writers appropriate to specific subject matter, like poems of social justice or poems connected to the experience of people in war. Or I at a different event, might get people to try to make poems. We would do a writing exercise and create works together. So, sometimes we'd have a really focused topic, and other times we'd be creating together. And that's where things started to get a little bit wild for me, because invitations would constantly come in to go do different things, and I would try to schedule things in a deliberate way to take me to different places, and it ended up for a pretty wild ride.
Can you talk a little bit about, you said different types of events and types of audiences, so can you give us a snapshot of what a typical week or trip might look like?
Yeah, well, I was looking at the beginning of this fall, and my fall began, or my late summer event was performing as part of the Metau Chamber Music Festival. That audience is a really well-heeled crowd vacationing in the Winthrop area, or going there specifically for the music festival. I think our own hoity-toity Vern often goes up there and speaks at it. But it's a high ticket, high-dollar ticket, and I shared some poems between the performed pieces of music. Later in that month, I read a poem that I had written. So it was a an occasional poem that the Washington State University asked me to write in honor of their first white coat ceremony, recognizing the first medical school class at the Elson S. Floyd College of Medicine. And I was deeply honored to sit by Elson Floyd's wife and Lisa Brown and take in that event with them. My poem that I created for the occasion has two epigraphs. The first one is from Robert Coles. If you've never heard of Robert Coles, he's a wonderful writer, and he spent a lot of time with Dr. William Carlos Williams. But Coles wrote, quote, "It's important to be a scientist, but it is also important to be a scientist who knows how to listen, how to think, and how to express himself or herself as clearly as possible. To get complicated ideas across to a person who has not studied medicine, but who is suffering." And Coles wrote that in Becoming a Doctor. The second quotation is from Walt Whitman, and it goes like this, quote, "Nothing is of any avail among the soldiers except conscientious personal investigation of cases, each for itself, with sharp critical facilities and boundless love." And Whitman wrote that in one of his letters from an army hospital during the Civil War in 1863 or 1864. Toward wholeness. The beautiful sounds, of course, are not to blame. Metastasize, lymphoma, tragic sibilance of sarcoidosis, the magical ease with which a word as brutal as tumor can be shaped with lips, teeth, and tongue. Consider, though, the fear of hearing those words, of cutaneous melanoma, or pharmaceutical, Zithromax, cisplatine, or even the phrase, "We'll start immediate aggressive treatment." We know that knowledge and music can bond in a lucid union against fear, a first singing toward making things whole, sound, or at least better. Yes, white cloth may have been a way to reveal the sprout of bacteria, and yes, the word heal, to make whole, is the reason for which we gather. To see, to hear, to know something so well that the doing becomes what we call love. Each day as we rise to broken bodies, physical, communal, political, we can try to move toward a first singing of wholeness that causes no fear, no harm. Remember, as the white cap on a wave reveals nothing of the water's purity or depth, and the white feathers of an osprey tell us little about the grace of its flight. Today is beautiful plumage and honor. Tomorrow, your gentle actions, the music of your listening, will bear out the virtue of a coat's threads. And that was kind of fun, telling the doctors, hey, this is how you have to be nice to people. Yeah. sometimes in class when I'm riffing on William Carlos Williams, I mention how he made thousands and thousands of house calls in the New Jersey neighborhoods that he visited. And students don't even know of the concept of house calls.
Yeah.
Of course, that was part of the practice, part of the profession. That was a fun poem to write. And, you know, I think in considering all of the occasional poems that I wrote, I think all of them but one, I resorted to either a sonnet or some kind of rhymed pattern to give me a specific shape to work within. Yeah. If I didn't have that shapeliness, if you will, that I was trying to fill, I felt overwhelmed and thought about that task of writing a poem for a specific occasion and usually in a pretty tight time frame, and how challenging it is. The poem on the 50th anniversary of Lacey Washington, I made kind of a rambling free verse poem because I think that all of the apocryphal stories about the formation of that town and stuff find their way into the poem. And so it seemed appropriate that the poem had a little less structure on it.
And so what was your message as Poet Laureate when you would visit classrooms or public events? What message were you trying to get out there besides just poetry?
Yeah, I think that early on in my journeys, I found myself saying again and again and again that poetry matters. And I tried to convince people how much poems matter. And I think that that was a noble mission, but it's one that wasn't as inclusive as what my efforts later evolved toward. Over the course of 23 months, I saw a slow shift from trying to talk about the importance of poems, which I still did, and I shared lots and lots of poetry with people, to talking about the importance of words and finding words that speak to you, finding words that matter to you, finding words that give you the world, that show you something about how you understand the world, that show you something about how you understand yourself. And then extending those words to hospitality, extending those words to hospitality of taking them inside of you to memorize words that matter to you, whether those words are found in a psalm or the Bill of Rights, whether those words are part of a speech by Martin Luther King or Abraham Lincoln. Find words that matter to you and carry them around with you. That became my mantra over the last 6 months, I think, of my service in this position. And it was a shift from trying to talk about how poetry and the arts matter so much and that as a focal point early on. And I think that's one way that the political moment that we're living in directly impacted my outreach work, made me rethink of what I was doing. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it means exactly, but it was a pretty noticeable shift.
We're talking with Todd Marshall, Washington's outgoing state poet laureate, about his memories and reflections upon his two-year term. This is The Bookshelf from KPBX Spokane Public Radio. One person who gained a firsthand perspective of Todd's travels throughout the state was Rick Nelson. Rick is a local artist and writer and a friend of Todd's who rode along with him on several of his trips to smaller communities in eastern Washington. I asked Rick how he first got roped into riding shotgun with the Poet Laureate.
I'm Rick Nelson. Todd's been a friend since 1990. He was an MFA student of my wife, Nance Van Winkle, at Eastern Washington University. What I admired about Todd that got me started on the ride-alongs was that he and Nance were doing a gig up in Newport at the Create Art Center. And over dinner, I hadn't seen him for a while, I'm going, so how's the Poet Laureate gig going and where have you been? And he started naming all these little towns that he'd been to, one corner of the state to the other. And I was impressed that he was putting his energy and time into small communities as well as the large ones. And the second thing was, when he was making, what's the travel budget, $1,500? That's not a lot. So if he's flying back and forth across the state, that budget's gone in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
So he's driving, which means he might be doing in Bellingham, a morning thing at a high school, something in the afternoon at a nearby high school, and then driving down to Linwood or Everett or farther to do an evening thing and doing that kind of schedule for 3 days. So he's just been very energetic. And so I said, hey, is there anything I can do to help you? You're doing great stuff. You're bending over backwards in this job. And I was thinking he would say, well, you know, I need money or travel money. And he went, I just need, you know, if you wanted to ride along with me, it'd be great to have somebody on the way back from a day trip to talk to me so I don't fall asleep while we're driving home.
Yeah. You can do that.
And it turned out, lucky me.
And what would your day look like once you got somewhere like a high school classroom? You know, Todd has this motto that he liked to say, words matter.
when he says words matter, and he says you should memorize something, and he'll say, let's get some poetry out there. And so often it's the Second Coming, mm-hmm. because that's, I realized, it's dramatic, it's scary, and it gets their attention. They might not understand it, but it gets like a train wreck right at the beginning, right? And they're kind of, you know, but they get it. And then he'll come back and he'll say, you know, it's important to memorize things and whatever's passionate and take to your heart. Have you memorized anything? And I think at the second class at Asotin, students had memorized the preamble, right?
To the Constitution.
Right.
Yeah.
And so he said, does anybody still remember it? And one quietish girl raised her hand and said the whole thing. And so Todd said, that's good, whatever, that's terrific. And he said, let's memorize a poem. And everybody kind of goes, including me, going, jeez. And so he goes, here's the poem. It's by Basho, who's the most famous poet of the Edo period, which is like 1600 Japan. So he's going to teach him a 1600s Japan haiku by Basho, which is old pond, frog leaping, splash. And they kind of go, oh,
that's a
cool
poem.
Yeah. So then he says it again. And he says, let's do it together until everybody does it. And then he'll point to somebody, and then they will repeat it. So he's a great teacher, right? Mm-hmm. He captures their imagination. And actually, that poem, I think, is about imagination, right?
Yeah.
You got just this minimum of description, but you leap in and splash the imagination.
Your imagination
takes over.
Fills in what's not
right,
there.
Right, right. So it's teaching, he's teaching them to memorize, and he's teaching them about imagination. He's not only teaching about poetry, it's about imagination and creativity, right? So then he'll say, well, let's try another one. And so this is William Carlos Williams, The Red Wheelbarrow. So much depends upon a red wheel barrow glazed with rain, water, beside the white chickens. And in 5 minutes, all the students have memorized that poem. So in under 10 minutes, he's had them memorize two poems. He said, memorization is important, take it to heart. Then he goes through them doing it twice to show them that it can be done.
Yeah.
I've been talking with Spokane-based artist Rick Nelson about his experiences riding along with Todd Marshall on his trips around the state as Poet Laureate of Washington. This is The Bookshelf from Spokane Public Radio. We're sharing reflections about Todd Marshall, Spokane-based poet and professor at Gonzaga University, who for the past 2 years has served as Washington Poet Laureate. Here's Todd reading an essay he wrote near the beginning of his term for Humanities Washington, one of the sponsors of the State Poet Laureate Program.
I would drink deeper. During the late winter and spring, I bounced around the state, from east side to west and back home again to Spokane. I visited libraries in Columbia City and Ritzville, schools in Olympia and Twisp, cultural centers and community museums on Whidbey in Federal Way. Mount Rainier, the awesome power of the Pacific Ocean, channeled scablands that give us a lens into the chiseling power of history, the Columbia rolling on. So many places, so many natural wonders. I also wrote poems in the creative company of adults and kindergarten classes, at workshops surrounded by bonsai trees and cinder blocks. I met the governor and I went on a local TV show to talk about the importance of art. I drove thousands of miles and flew back and forth between Spokane and Seattle at least 3 times. Everywhere that I went, people met me with enthusiasm and treated me with kindness and tremendous hospitality. I believe in the importance of poetry. More generally, I believe in the importance of all of the arts and the humanities. I want to be precise, though, about what I understand that to mean. I don't think that poetry is balm, something to relieve the pain of our troubled times, an anguished cry that sounds forth when the heart is disturbed. Sure, like any of the creative endeavors we pursue, dance, song, painting, poetry can offer some song of solace or witness when the daily death toll seems too much, when the most recent brutal bend in the divining rod that searches out our faith in humanity horseshoes beyond a return to everydayness. This last summer had far too many instances when, I imagine, many of us felt that strain toward snapping, and sometimes well-crafted words provided relief. I think, though, that the arts work more subtly. Their unknowability, the great mystery of how Cezanne captures a certain slant of light just so, how Faulkner takes us into the tortured psyche of Southerners trying to come to grips with the past, which is never the past. How Claudia Rankine simultaneously asks us to think about what poetry is, while also asking us to consider the potential violence that might lurk in our definition, and so on. All of the wonderfully ambiguous and difficult to define gestures that art, and if we're candid with ourselves, ethics and history and sociology, the humanities, urge us to inhabit. As the political rhetoric becomes more and more shrill, I find myself more and more confident that the only thing that can save us is the cultivation of uncertainty, of questioning, of openness to the world, to the possibility of being mistaken. Is there a more poetic moment than the moment when someone says to someone else, with feeling, with sincerity, "I'm sorry, I was wrong. I'll try harder to understand how you see things"? To be able to do that, each of us has to cultivate space for the mysterious, for unknowing. Call it an inner life, call it whatever works for you. Perhaps it's a space within us being made ready for the stars. At the end of the second chapter of Walden, Henry David Thoreau, after laying out the economics of his venture in the first chapter and stating his reasons for going, quote, to the woods to live deliberately, writes this oft-quoted but mysterious passage, quote, "Time is but the stream I go a-fishing in. I drink at it, but while I drink I see the sandy bottom and detect how shallow it is. Its thin current slides away, but eternity remains. I would drink deeper, fish in the sky whose bottom is pebbly with stars. I cannot count one. I know not the first letter of the alphabet. I've always been regretting that I was not as wise as the day I was born." Skip the opening lines so easily printed on postcards and look at how, when Thoreau confronts the stars and eternity, he loses his ability to count, to communicate. He's taken to a place beyond language, a place of unknowing, of uncertainty. That, it seems, is paradoxically closer to the wisdom that came with him into this world. And this space shares a kinship with what I feel sometimes in the air at the end of a good discussion about the arts, at the end of a community open mic where the poets brought what mattered to them, at the end of a workshop where sometimes 7 or 8 of us, sometimes 30 or 40, sat around a table and tried to bring something new into being. This fall looks to be very busy. My Subaru will zoom, zoom, zoom down I-90 and slow, slow, slow as the Seattle skyline comes into view. And I'm glad for all of my future rendezvous with mystery, unknowing, that vast potentiality in which beautiful things can be made.
That was Todd Marshall reading his essay, "I Would Drink Deeper," originally published on the Humanities Washington blog. This is The Bookshelf from Spokane Public Radio. This has been the first of four episodes looking back on Todd Marshall's term as Poet Laureate of Washington State. Join us tomorrow as we hear more reflections from Todd and stories from those who have interacted with him as Poet Laureate. For The Bookshelf, I'm Chris Messini.